We're continuing with a special series of interviews called Journey of Wellness in Indian Country. Melissa Lewis, Dr. Melissa Lewis is our guest this morning. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Biobehavioral Health and Population Science at the UMD Medical School. She's also a licensed family therapist. This morning, we're talking about something called that you may have heard of. It's called historical trauma. And it's kind of a complicated thing to explain, and it's also complicated from the standpoint that if you are not a part of a culture that has experienced historical trauma, it's kind of hard for you to get a grip on what they're talking about and how it all comes together. Dr. Lewis, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We hope you can shed a little light on this subject for us.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for having me, and I wanted to thank one of our students, Nathan Ratner, for working to put this all together, and I will do my best. So historical trauma or historical loss is the cumulative emotional, psychological, and even physical wounding over the lifespan and across generations that's occurred due to a massive group trauma experience. And Dr. Maria Yellowhorse Braveheart did a lot of work in the 90s and early 2000s to conceptualize and put a model together. And some of her work came from looking at other communities, Jewish communities and African-American communities as well. And there are a few distinguishing characteristics about historical trauma, and it's widespread. So many people experience this. Or were affected by these events. Another characteristic is that the events are usually perpetrated on a group and their environment by outsiders with a purposeful intent. And the third is that it generates this high level of contemporary distress and mourning.
So I'm thinking it's this fog advisory, and obviously I need one for my brain this morning. The idea is that this historical trauma happens to a population, whatever it might be, and the way it becomes manifest is through depression, through self-destructive behavior, anxiety, low self-esteem, these kinds of things. And then obviously children that are raised by people suffering these experiences or suffering these side effects from these experiences, plus they're being talked to, no doubt, about the experiences, just perpetuates this problem for these different population groups. Is that fair to say?
That's right. There is a researcher in the Twin Cities, Dr. Laurel Myra, and she put together an intergenerational transmission of historical trauma and loss. And some of those events that we're talking about, these origins, these, you know, precursor events, are things such as the boarding school era, the relocation and reservation or era, or the termination policies, the Indian adoption era, for example. And what's been surprising is that the historical loss scale is a scale that has been developed by Dr. Whitbeck and colleagues, and they ask folks, how often do you think about these things? Like, how often do you think about the loss of your language, the loss of your land, the loss of your traditional spiritual ways? And we would think that there would be this kind of linear relationship. So if someone's great-grandparent was in boarding school and, you know, it was a particularly traumatic event in time, that their grandchild or great-grandchild wouldn't be affected so much. But Dr. Whitbeck, Dr. Walls, Dr. Myra have all found, they looked at this over two generations and over three generations, and for some folks, their thoughts about this loss has actually increased. So you're exactly right. This trauma is not linear, doesn't necessarily decrease over time, and it's a very complicated understanding of loss and trauma. And you're right, absolutely. It's it's been found to be associated with depression and anxiety, suicidal ideation, substance abuse, and in some of the studies, they found up to over half of these adolescents have these daily thoughts about historical loss, even though they themselves have maybe not necessarily been relocated, even though they've not necessarily been through boarding schools themselves. It's this total family and intergenerational environment that has occurred.
And, of course, as European Americans who either did not go through a historical trauma or were, heaven forbid, responsible for perpetuating a historical trauma, it's really hard for even well-intentioned people to say, oh, for heaven's sake, you know, that was 100 years ago. Get over it. You know, especially given, in many instances, the European Americans' insistence culturally on get over it, move on. The boarding school era, I knew a guy who had been in a boarding school. The boarding school era, I don't think European Americans realize that it ended only within the last 30, 40 years, that there are still people who had that experience firsthand.
Right. Well, I think you're really getting on an important point, because a lot of folks, they don't see how this trauma and this inequity that occurs with indigenous communities, they don't see it, and so they feel like it happened 100, 200 years ago. But really, it's still very much here and alive. You know, the Indian boarding school was in 1880s. Indian adoption era went from 1950s to 1980s, which is an area that my father, Dr. Ronald Lewis, was very passionate about and worked to end the Indian adoption era. And during the 1950s to the 1980s, about a third of indigenous children were taken from their homes. The rate of removal was 25 times higher than non-indigenous children. And about almost up to 90% of all indigenous children that were in foster care were in non-indigenous homes. And the reason, there was a study in 1969 and again in 1974, and they found that 99% of the reasons these children were removed was because of a belief, an inequitable belief based on race, such as they thought the Indian children, or excuse me, an Indian reservation was not a suitable place to raise a child. They thought that because there was multiple generations in a home, that it wasn't a suitable home. So we can kind of see where the discrimination kind of continued. And today, indigenous children that are in foster care and are placed out of home is higher than any other group. It's still 13 times higher than white children. And Minnesota is actually the state that has the highest out-of-home placement. So even though this trauma occurred, you know, we can think about these children being ripped from their homes, and people think that's historic. It's really not historic. The rates have gone down slightly, but it's still the most inequitable rates of out-of-home placement.
So you're working on an innovative curriculum to help medical students learn about historical trauma, and how are you hoping that they will be able to take this information and put it into practice once they become doctors and healthcare professionals working with indigenous people?
Well, we're sort of just getting started on this. We're in our second year of adding about 7 hours about indigenous health, history, culture, for example, to the curriculum for these first-year medical students. And, you know, Duluth has a long history of really being committed to partnering with the local indigenous communities. And so this was just a way to continue in that spirit and to really be able to educate medical providers just right away about indigenous communities, because there is such a lack of education prior to medical school and, you know, even prior to those undergraduate years. And so it was a little bit of catch up just so people can be in Minnesota. Many of our students go back to rural areas, and they're going to encounter, many of them, the largest minority population will be indigenous folks. And do they know what tribes that they're working with, do they know the what we call seasonal rounds? What are the activities that are important to the communities? And so we've done that for about 2 years now, and we did a little bit of a follow-up of how these students are doing, and we did find that over, you know, after 2 weeks, the students continue to retain this indigenous knowledge, this information, and even 6 months later, there was a statistically significant effect where these students continue to remember this knowledge. And we also checked in on a concept called ethnocultural empathy. So, you know, that particular idea is that you can understand the differences and you can understand the experiences of other groups. And that was statistically significant. So really that translates to being in a room with a patient and being able to know a little bit about who is sitting in front of you and also being able to empathize when they come and tell you a little bit about what their life is like. Unfortunately, there is a high rate of discrimination and microaggressions that happen. So many patients do not trust their providers. They don't feel comfortable going. And we're hoping that we graduate physicians who will be able to be very effective in being able to work with indigenous communities and patients.
Melissa, this is a fascinating series of programs. And again, we'd like to thank Nathan Ratner for being kind of the brainchild behind this and getting the programs coordinated for us. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It was great to have you as a guest.
Thank you, Lisa.
Melissa Lewis, our guest this morning. Dr. Melissa Lewis is an assistant professor in the Department of Biobehavioral Health and Population Sciences at the UMD Medical School. She's also a licensed family therapist. Our guest this morning on a short series called Journey of Wellness in Indian Country, Mondays, right here on KUMD 103.3 in March this year.